session number 15726, reel 3.
I can't remember who was with me on that occasion at all. I can remember falling.
This is Cathy McPherson, side 3. Tell me a little bit about R.J. Mitchell, your memories of him, and what you had to do with him. I think you played tennis with him at one time, didn't you?
Yes, I went as his tennis partner. Neither of us were very good players, and I couldn't concentrate. We were playing at Weymouth, Whitehead Torpedo. Couldn't concentrate for looking at the sea. All I could see was the sea. I couldn't see the tennis ball. But we had quite fun. He had to pass my door on the way home, and quite often he gave me a lift home and chatted. He was a very friendly man, but very quiet. Wasn't a talkative man, but never was rude. I never knew him to be rude or curt in any way at all.
Shy.
Not a very good mixer. I think at that time he had an awful lot in his mind, because he knew the Spitfire was... He was working on something like that, and I don't think he had any idea it was going to be the enormous success it was. I don't think for one minute he thought it would... Well, we didn't know about a war, for one thing. We didn't anticipate a war. At least I didn't. I don't know whether he did, whether he knew or not.
Hitler was in power in Germany at that time, wasn't
yes,
he?
Yes, he was building up the youngsters, wasn't
what
he?
What was he, how aware were you in those days of Hitler and Nazi Germany?
I think the people who were running the country and people in high positions probably knew, but they never told the public, not until it was fait accompli, more or less. A lot of our people went across to Germany on holiday and were greatly impressed by how the young people were being recruited and trained. Hundreds and hundreds of girls all in uniform parading, and the same with the young men, brown, I think they said they were brown uniforms. They all came back amazed at the sort of accuracy and the sort of magnificence of their training, how they marched and how they behaved. No nonsense, it was all very serious. Of course, we'd done nothing about it that stage. We didn't think about war, we hadn't thought about it. But they were preparing for a long time.
Tell me a little bit more about your holidays in those days. Did you go away for your holiday? Could you afford to go to the seaside or anything like that?
What holidays did I have?
I mean, you were in your 30s in the 1930s, weren't you?
Earning all of about £3 a week. £3 a week saving for holidays. In those days you could get quite a good hotel for £5 a week. Full board. I don't think of anything terribly exciting. I went to Scotland, up to my family in Scotland once or twice. My friend had his parents had a car which we had the use of. My aunt, and she's nursing my aunt.
Anyhow, the car you were talking about?
It had a car made by two brothers in Bath. Now, what was it? They didn't make very many cars. A great long bonnet. It was a lovely car. I can't remember what it's called. So we could borrow that for holidays. We used to go down to with a holiday in Ilfracombe. Where else did we go? Went to Scotland in it. Broke two leaves. In the back spring, the road wasn't made up going through Glencoe, and it was full of puddles and thunder and lightning, and went bang, 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 and when we got to our destination, both the springs had leaves broken in them. Oh, and another little incident will make you laugh. My friend was working for Saunders Row, and he bought a raffle ticket for a 4-seater large Morris Oxford open tourer car, which we won for sixpence. So he said, well, if it goes round the island, up and down the hills, we'll bring it across, but it won't, we'll just leave it. So we went across and went up and down. You know the Isle of Wight, it's all hills. He did it perfectly. He says, right, we'll take it across. We brought it across. And when we took it to bits, it had a roof, a hood, that you brought over the top and filled into spokes on the side, and your side windscreens were cellophane gone brown, which had to fix in.
So it wasn't a new car then?
Oh no, it was a second-hand car. Mm-hmm. Second-hand car, but a good engine in it, very good engine in it. We took it to Scotland. And it came down in buckets, and we had to get out to get the hood on. We got the hood, and the wind caught the hood, and of course we couldn't hold on to it. It blew the hood and nearly lifted the car off the ground. It was fantastic. And then getting in these awful windscreens, you soon couldn't see through them. And the windscreen you had to put up in the front to see, you couldn't see through the windscreen. There's no windscreen wipers, there's nothing at all. And we did the whole of Tour de Scotland in that car. It was marvellous.
And this was a boyfriend of yours, was
it? Yes, 14 years. That's all I knew him for. 14 years. He was one of the ones who built the aeroplane.
And he was at Saunders Row at Cowes.
He went there, but they hated him too. The Saunders Row boys didn't want to be taught how to build aeroplanes. They were sent to teach them how to build this particular. They didn't want it at all, so they gave him quite a bad time. So they all left. He went up to Feltham to work. I can't remember where it was, something in Feltham. I lost trace of him after a while. Yes.
It's another age, isn't it, the 1930s, how you lived in those days and how you made your entertainment and so on. You mentioned these dances you had and...
The sports club dance. We had a marvellous badminton section, with a marvellous swimming section. Polo players a lot. They used to come in. We were allowed a certain time, and they would come in. They used to come in and dive on top of us, sink us all to the bottom of the baths. And the great big fellow was a wonderful, forgotten Cooper. When I saw him to go up to the Science Museum, I couldn't believe it. Couldn't believe it. He had glasses. He had walking stick. I think he had walking sticks. He was deaf. Oh, and he was about 6 feet. Somebody looked so. Miserable little man.
When was this, the presentation of the Snyder Trophy? Was it before the war or?
Oh, no. Fairly recently.
Was it?
Within the last 10 years.
Uh-huh.
Last 10 years. Yes.
What about the time when the Rolls-Royce engineers came down and you were playing cards?
Well, that was a Sidley. Armstrong Sidley boy, yeah. Man, yeah. Yes. Well, that was in a friend of mine had a very big house and she took them all in. With a great crowd. I didn't see them in the factory, of course, only saw them in the evening afterwards, after work. All married men. They weren't young men, they were men. But they were thrilled to be down working in the Supermarine. They'd heard so much about it. Everybody wanted to work in Supermarine at one stage. All the young people all was their aim to work in Supermarine. I'd never heard of it. I'd never heard of it at all.
How did you actually take your job there? Was it the job advertised?
Advertised, yes. And funnily enough, I took the place. Or did she take my place? I think she either I took or she took the girl that Alan Clifton married. Either when I left or when she left. She lived in the Isle of Wight. She lived in the Isle of Wight. We were great friends all the way through. A nice family. His son went into the Air Force and was the prize pupil of the year, and when he came out he couldn't really get a job. Then he flew for some insurance company's private aircraft, but he didn't get on awfully well with that. It was so irregular, he never knew where he was going to be. And then he married Hillier's daughter, the man who has the arboretum. Do you know Hillier's arboretum in Romsey? Well, young Alan married the daughter, Mr. Hillier's daughter. And then he had an audit. He did all sorts of things. He never really got back into aircraft again. It's rather a shame because he liked it very much.
Because Southampton was a busy port in those days.
Oh, lovely.
You could see the Queen Mary coming and going and the Mauritania. Tell me a bit about that.
And the people who came through Southampton. Not everybody of any importance came through Southampton to go on a ship to go to America. And if there was anybody very important, Father would get us a pass, a permit, to go on board or to go down with his quayside. And when the Prince of Wales and the three princes went to Canada, we saw them. And when Princess Marina and her husband, I don't know if she was going or coming, we saw them. We saw lots of film stars. And the ships, the decor in the ships was something out of this world, something we'd never seen in the land. Beautiful suites, bedrooms, and the entrance, the foyer with all food really was sealing, and the fruit, gorgeous.
Your father was back in the shipping business, presumably.
Yes, yes. He was an assistant marine superintendent for Canadian Pacific. And then he was sent up to London because they were closing the port down, shipping the passenger service down. He was sent up to London, but he didn't get on very well in London. He didn't like London very much. And then he came back and joined Harland and Wolff on their repairs section, which he enjoyed very much. He liked that.
Was that in Belfast? Or?
No, in Southampton.
Still Southampton,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He retired from there. He was a very clever man, but he was a stupid man.
Mm. When did he die?
1970.
Oh.
I had him for 10 years after my mother died. I was in Cheltenham. I had to get a flat, and he just said he wanted to come and live with us, so I had to have him. And 10 years I had him. He didn't need to die. He had a heart as strong as a lion, but blood poisoning set in. He had prostate gland trouble, and they couldn't operate because his lungs were so full of phlegm from smoking too much. The time they cleared his lungs, blood poisoning had set in, and he went very, very quickly. Unexpectedly. So I was free then. But no, there was no... all my jobs, I've loved every job I've done, most of them anyway, but there's no excitement in jobs after Supermarine. That was so alive. Everybody was so alive. Everybody was keen in their job. Nobody would stay away, no matter how old you were. You wouldn't stay away. You went to work. I fell down the stairs.
Mm.
I had stairs up to my office, I was running down, and I fell down the stairs. And my boss used to bring my work to me. He said, you do more work than 6 men. So he used to come every morning and bring the work and come and clear it.
Now, when Vickers moved in and took over, you said all that changed, the friendliness went.
Yes. He weren't allowed into the factory. He weren't allowed to do anything at all. Well, when I say weren't allowed, he went in business. But, I mean, there's no fraternising.
Mm.
The foreman couldn't say, come and have a look at this, it's just finished, or just see what we're doing now. That was forbidden, completely forbidden.
And you couldn't go for any more flights in flying
boats? No, that was out altogether.
Did you ever have a flight in a Southampton flying boat in those days?
Yes, it was Southampton flying boats they were trying out, great big hulking things they were.
Is that when you sat on that bench on the bare floor? Or?
Spars, just the spars, yes.
How long did these flights last?
Terribly long. You'd go down and up and down and up, and then you say, oh, I've lost my tailplane, oh, I've lost my exhaust pipe, oh, I've lost... This was all frightening me most of the time. So we'd go down... Boom, 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 boom. Awful landing. Terrible landing.
But you were quite privileged, because very few people went up in an aeroplane in those days, didn't they?
I wasn't allowed. By law, I wasn't allowed. I wasn't allowed to tell anybody. Otherwise, there'd be trouble for him. He didn't care. He couldn't care.
It was Bayard, was it?
Bayard, yes.
Yeah.
Scatterbrain, mad, but a nice fella. Nice fella. Mm-hmm. He had a friend, that very beautiful French wife. She was lovely. But our Christmas parties and our dances really were great. The great fun. We were having our big dinner dance, or maybe a big dance, on the Southampton Pier the evening that the Prince of Wales abdicated, and everything stopped to listen to him. I remember that. Matt Westbrook was there. I can remember him being there at the time. He...
That was an event that really took hold of the whole nation, really, didn't it? And people had strong opinions both ways, didn't
yes.
they?
Yes. Nobody wanted to dance again. It was awful to try and get it going again. Nobody wanted at all. Can't get up and say, oh, Teddy doing a thing like that. Nobody would believe it of him. They didn't think he would be so stupid. I couldn't think why he was so stupid. Was she your cup of tea?
But you see, the difference then was that, you know, people read The Sun now and they see that Prince Charles and Diana are breaking up and it doesn't bother them. It wouldn't stop a dance or it wouldn't stop people going to a party.
No.
I think the royal family was much more.
Oh, they were revered. They were
revered.
Oh gosh, yes, they were above anything like that. And for him to do have these clandestine meetings and so on, oh, and to involve our prime minister and all our church people, I thought it was despicable.
Now, there are other things that even I remember as a child. Armistice Day.
Mm-hmm.
11 o'clock on Armistice
Yes,
Day.
Yes, traffic stopped. Everything stopped. All work stopped. And everybody stood to attention with head bow for 2 minutes. When war was declared. Have you heard that before? The night it was a Sunday. We were up there. We were working Sundays in those days, Saturdays and Sundays, and we were working like fury. And I said to my pal, I want to go to church. She says, yes, so do I. I said, well, let's go. We weren't allowed to go out without our gas masks, and at that time we hadn't been able to afford a proper weather box, cardboard box, so we strutted into church. Oh, and before that, before that, we'd worked all afternoon deadpan, and we'd each scoffed a packet of licorice all sorts, which was beginning to rumble in our tummies. And I thought, oh, was it wise to go to church? Oh, yes, I must go to church. So we went to church, sat down. She sat, gas mask. I sat, gas mask. And we just looked and I thought, what have we come to? What have we come to? And there's hardly anybody in the church. And I thought, well, we must attend this church. I can't remember a thing about the service. I was so engrossed with those belly cardboard. But I thought, what's in them? What are we going to do with them anyway? When are we going to ever use them? I nearly threw it out the door. I can't remember a thing about the service, but I remember going, oh, it's a tummy ache.
Did you ever do gas mask drill?
Oh, yes. Oh, I'd left Supermarine by that time. I was in Hastings by that time. What the dickens were doing in Hastings?
But gas mask drill involved sitting with a gas mask on and getting used to it. You did that.
Mm. I was training for AVP, VP, what's the warden? What was
ARP.
It? ARP. Because each organisation had to have their own leader. You had to train your own staff, so you had to go and get training yourself. And we had the big ones like the elephant stuck in your face. Oh, golly. I used to have hysterics, and they would put me in slacks. Well, of course, slacks are for 6 foot men, and the centre of the slacks was down at my knees, and I was constantly pulling these, trying to keep them together. It's dreadful. Then, with one part where we'd to lean over to take the person off a wall, gassed, and unline them, to resuscitate them, and you'd lean over them, and I kept doing this. And so, for heaven's sake, stop scratching. I said, the trousers were too long for me, and then you had to bend down and give them something to do with this. It wasn't mouth-to-mouth resuscitation, it was something else. And this great thing hanging like an elephant's trunk in the front, it was dreadful. Then we had to go up a ladder into a gas-filled house with this big thing. That was horrible. I hated that. We didn't have any of that in the war. I don't remember any gas training at all in the war.
But this ARP drill was during the war, wasn't it?
Was that during the war?
Probably, I don't know.
Well, it wouldn't be ARP if it wasn't the war, would it?
Yeah. You weren't involved in the bombing as ARP, were you? You weren't a warden.
No, but I was a first aider. I was supposed to have had my leg broken and my arm broken and vaulting at a gate and went to lie there till the ambulance came, and the ambulance never came, and we were still there about 7 o'clock at night.
But were you actually involved in the bombing as a first aider? Did you actually have to go out
during
the bombing?
Yes, a man came in with a big piece out of his head, and I thought, God. So I had a bit of handkerchief or something, and I soaked it very much and shoved it in his head, and I said, stop whimpering. And I had gobstoppers in here, and I shoved a big gobstopper in his mouth, and I said, now suck, 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 suck. And I thought, what do I do with this sort now? You have to look for bandages. And his wife came up and said, thank you so much, Miss McPherson, you saved my husband's life. I said, what was she? She shoved the sweet in his mouth.
Were you actually in a first aid post then?
And people
were brought in?
Yes,
to you?
Yes, yes, yes. All the dead people brought in. Women were out saying, have you seen my husband, Miss Mac? I said, no, and he was lying dead in the corner. You weren't allowed to tell anybody anything. We had no official business there at all, was just to help. The doctor and his team, nurses, came hours after, and congratulated us on the marvellous work we'd done keeping them all going. We did bandaging and just chatting to the men knew us, and just said, but this poor fellow had a big hole in his head, it was dreadful, and a great big wads of stuff said, hold your hand tight in that now, and suck, suck.
Did you have any difficulty adjusting to these gruesome sights that you saw then?
I was frightened. I was frightened.
I mean, the first dead body, how did you feel? You were reading
I felt again. Sick for the wife who was waiting outside for me to tell her if I'd seen him. I'd tell a lie. I said no. I couldn't tell her because she wanted to come in. I couldn't let her in. Then we all had little bags, and as the people were brought in, I had to take the wristwatches off and the teeth out if necessary and put them in the bag and put their name and address and tie it around the wrists so that if they did die, they knew who it was.
What was your routine? I mean, did you have to attend the first aid post on certain evenings or only when the sirens went or what?
Well, we were trained for when the sirens went, but we had to go to lectures. We're always getting lectures, attending lectures for new ideas and sort of things that might happen. But you have no idea, I don't care how clever films are not, you have no idea what's going to happen until it does happen. And it always happens as you don't expect it to happen. I never expect them to bring in dead people. I don't know why I thought they'd have kept them where they'd died, but no, they brought them all into us, into the room, into the big...
Where was this first aid post?
Opposite the factory. Mm-hmm. It was built specially. It wasn't built specially for first aid, it was a special place that was built. And it was built for first aid, yes it was, first aid. And canteen up the top. But the people were wonderful. The men were marvellous themselves. And couldn't get ambulances, couldn't get doctors, they couldn't get through. There was burst drains and all sorts of things. And when they did come through with their team, of course, the people had been injured for quite a long while. Nobody had died on our hands, I don't think. They were brought in. I don't remember anybody dying in front of us at all.
I mean, you could render immediate first aid, like stopping bad bleeding and things like that, like you did with the gobstopper.
Yes. The thing was to keep the person from panicking, whichever way you felt was right. It was to give them a drink of tea. In fact, I went up and pinched some buns out of the canteen, currant buns, and I gave some of them a lump of currant. I was panic-stricken. All the theory and everything that I'd ever learned didn't mean a thing. The thing is, you just pray very hard and you're given some idea of what you're... A temporary thing, not a permanent, temporary thing. But stop bleeding, of course, is terribly important. And shock is another thing. But if they know you and you talk to them, that's a great helping. They'd hang on like the Dickens hang on to you. That was lovely. We had lots of nice letters afterwards from the men, saying how nice it was to see us there. They're all chirpy. Not realising the awful tragedy was when they hit the oil fuel tank next to us and it started to run and it caught fire and it was flames of fuel. We couldn't get out of the hut, out of our little swinging thing, and of course it was getting suffocating in there. It was getting hotter and hotter, and a man came along with planks of wood and put some brick under. He would all to run down these planks through the flames out into open air. It didn't blow up. It was concrete. It didn't blow up. It just put it out. It was a terrible...
Your memories of those days, though, I mean, presumably everyone pulled together and mucked in and didn't complain. And
nobody was with themselves. We were all together as a team, a great team. And we'd been saving up for months and months and months in a great big chest, as big as that, all our chocolate and things that we'd keep, bags of sweets, for the great day. Well, of course, when the great day came, we forgot about this. And somebody pinched it, we never saw it again. We never used it. But we were going to have such a whale of a time with all this chocolate when we were blitz. Didn't need it.
And I suppose when the war ended, you were up in Sheffield, were you? On your sister's farm?
Oh, no. I was in this in the office in Portswood, Lady Milner White's house, for quite a while. I must have... Where did I leave? No, I went out to Hursley. We were all evacuated to Hursley. We took over... Hursley House. We took over the IBM place now. Sir George Cooper's place. Do you know Hursley?
Yeah.
Between Romsey and Winchester. Uh-huh. Beautiful big house in its own grounds. Oh, Superman took that. We were all pushed out there. And our wages department was put in another beautiful villa on the right-hand side of the road. But we had all our food up there. We went up through the park for our food. A lovely canteen there. Beautiful rooms. And the cheeky Brighton drawing office had the games room or something with all the antlers, and they used to throw their hats up. They all had a name for them in the morning, and when you went in, all these antlers had hats.
Do you remember VE Day, the end of the war?
I can't remember VE Day at all. Mm. Cannot for the life of me. I don't know where I would be. Was it 1 year after?
1945. This was 3 years after you left Supermarine.
Oh, I must have been up in Sheffield by that time.
Mm. It didn't make an impression on you anyway.
I don't remember. I remember seeing photographs of the children in London in the streets. I can remember all seeing all that, but I wasn't involved. But I was this year. Our home put out a table the whole length of the garden in the front with red, white and blue tablecloths. We had red, white and blue hats on. We had flags, Union Jacks. The trees were all lit up. The gramophone was going and all the motors were hooting as they came along. It was great fun. That's the first frivolity I've ever known of VE Day. And otherwise.
And it came 50 years later. Cathy, that's been a wonderful chat. I think perhaps...
Good, thank you.
You've exhausted your stories now, have you?
I should... but probably something will flash in my brain when I'm not thinking about it.
Yes.
But I've never talked about it at all. Nobody I know is interested in anything like that.
Well, you've met someone today who is.
My goodness. Well, I hope it's going to do you some... Yeah. Hope it's going to get you some sort of nice, interesting article that everybody will want to read. But not because of me. Not me. Just the sort of things that were happening in those days. I'd love to hear people being able to read, because the people wouldn't believe the conditions we worked under. To think there were four of us girls in a room half the size of this, with a little wee...
About 6 feet square.
In a little wee fireplace with one piece of coal and one piece of wood on it. And that was all the heating we had. You had to go down to the toilet to get some water, to make yourself a cup of cocoa. That was all we could have. And you had to hide it in your desk in case the boss came, and if he came, you kept the desk down. If he didn't come, you drank out of that. And no overtime. You were there till 11 o'clock at night, working. Nothing at all. Pub officer, but I didn't drink, so therefore I got nothing out of it. Mm. Never moan. I don't remember people ever moaning. Don't remember people ever moaning. And we used to run sweepstakes, totalisators, all sorts of things for the derby and everything under the sun. And I was the luckiest person. I was always winning. And if my name was down first, nobody would go down. Because they thought I was always going to... But in the end, I'd never won at all. I used to go on with totalisation and put a pound a time on, then tomorrow we'd put another pound on. A lot of money involved, but great fun for that. And we used to all lie on the floor with a little radio, getting turned about, listening to what was going on, and somebody was keeping watch out to make sure the boss didn't catch us.
And Cathy, what about Norman?
Hmm?
What about Norman?
Norman.
You were engaged to Norman.
Oh, that's an old
14 years?
Not that, not
that.
But
you never, ever got married?
No. I was enjoying myself too much. I was having a whale of a time. Absolute whale of a time.
You never wanted to get married?
No, I didn't see any sense as far as I was concerned. Partner for badminton, a partner for tennis, a partner for golf, partner for skating. I didn't need anything else. Quite happy.